Welcome to People More Interesting Than Me, the podcast, where I step back and let fascinating individuals take the spotlight. Join me as I sit down with incredible guests who captivate and inspire, showcasing their stories, experiences, and wisdom that make them truly extraordinary. Tune in for engaging conversations that'll leave you enlightened and entertained. I mean, at least I'm entertained. This week, we're diving into the captivating journey of Julie Perkins, the dynamic force behind Wise Minds, a platform empowering female entrepreneurs to soar to new heights. With over two decades of expertise fueling her mission, Julie doesn't just guide her mentees, she ignites their potential. Join us as we unravel Julie's extraordinary journey from corporate titan to empowering mentor, proving that the most captivating stories often merge from the moments of profound self-discovery. This is People More Interesting Than Me, and Julie Perkins is certainly no exception. Enjoy.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. This is great.
No, thank you for having me.
It's awesome. You're outside of Amsterdam. I love Amsterdam.
Mostly, nice.
Mostly because the connectivity of the city and the bikes and all that. Just because in college, that was like my perfect time. And one day I hope to have a job where I can like bike to work. And I don't know. It's always just soothing that you can kind of bike everywhere where you need to be.
Oh, yeah.
And are you originally from the UK? Or is that?
Yes, I am from the UK. I'm from Guernsey in the Channel Islands.
Thank you for being on. I really appreciate it. And obviously, you're going to be more interesting than me. It's not too hard. If you want to talk to me a little bit about Wise Minds and how you got into it, and what did you see that kind of that you needed to, and I've mentioned this maybe on one or two podcasts, that like when people have like a vision or an idea, it's obviously that they look in the world and they see a vacuum or they see a spot that's just like not touched. What was that for you?
Well, actually, the beginning of it was I used to go and watch these pitches, you know, and you actually have to pay to get into these pitches, which is very strange. And you're given this array of amazing people with selling their dream, hoping to win, you know, 10,000 euros or something that's going to help them, plus the fact getting the recognition. And I remember being at a women's pitch one, and I knew exactly who was going to win, because there is a certain type of business, a scalable one, one that can sort of go farther. And I knew exactly who would win. Each one of them was great ideas. And it made me think, going, what happens to all these amazing ideas that don't fit in the investment pot? What happens to them? Because they're still great. I remember one of them, the ideas was about a recruitment agency for people who had been displaced from different areas of Europe, giving them that part. And that's such a great idea. So I thought, couldn't there be a part of what I could do would be to support all ideas, and women often will have more community orientated ideas, something that betters a society. So there's something really to be lost from putting that stake in the sand. I just thought we were losing really good ideas just because they didn't fit in a pot. And I thought, actually, that's something I can do. My background of growing businesses in Europe would very much help with that. And, you know, I've done it in a particular purpose-led way all of my life. And I think that's something that suits today's society. So that's why I started Wise Minds. And it was originally Wise Minds with an I. And then a young person said it made me sound old. So I changed it to a Y.
No, that's great. So can you talk a little bit about that foundation, what got you there? Like, I mean, the crazy thing that people don't realize is I feel like it's involuntary experience, if that makes sense, that we fall into these like really good roles with combined experience, like I feel like I've got like three or four jobs that inadvertently showed me stuff that I would have never realized.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, to be quite honest, there's nothing greater than failure to identify a big learning. And my journey into Wise Minds really started sort of 15 years earlier with failure. And I was here growing a brand in the Netherlands. And that brand had only ever been in United Kingdom. And it was amazingly successful. And it still is successful to this day. And I think the expectation of landing in a country, you know, everyone's sort of saying, oh, thank goodness you've arrived. We thank you for helping us. And of course, no one thinks like that. And I think that learning is that just because you've been successful in one area, there's a lot of considerations when you are rolling out a new brand. And especially in part of mainland Europe. And that was my failure. And I'd managed to open up a good, let's say 105 stores that were doing okay, but it was in the big recession of the Great Recession of 2008, and it was chugging. And everything on paper should have meant that it would have been flowing like the UK was. And I actually was in this house, and I sat in the garden at 3 a.m. in the, you know, the morning, just going, what more can I do? As if something would come to me in a flash of lightning or something. And actually, I ended up sharing this very big frustration with a few of my colleagues. And they said to me, do you still love what you do, Julie? And I said, yes, of course I do. You know, being the leader, I don't want to let on, you know. And really, it's the very first question that I should have asked, because as you are under pressure as an entrepreneur, you hold on tighter, you don't let people in, you start holding and building a business around you, and you are the reason for it chugging. And someone politely suggested we'd worked with each other a long time, you know, you need to make yourself redundant. Obviously not in a horrible way, but to keep repositioning yourself. And still to this day, I make myself redundant on a 6-monthly basis to reposition myself in, so I'll never be stuck there again. And it's this moment when you realize the impact of a founder on holding tighter, or they call it the founder's trap, that can be the cause of an early maturity demise. And I thought, gosh, if I can support women who want to grow their business just with that one message, you know, how to make yourself redundant effectively from your own business, you know, it can be 80% of the problem. So when I had my journey had ended with there, well, I'm still slightly involved, I just wrote, as if I was writing a book, but not stopping, this sort of thinking about what have I done to go from this staggering, sort of stuttering company into a company that's in line for market leadership. And I just wrote it. And then from that, those learnings about redundancy, space, purpose, and how you bring people together when you don't have success, when you don't have money, how do you unite effectively in a pressurized situation? And that's what I do now. I just, you know, support women to go, I haven't got any money. Okay, you know, and everyone always goes, wow, we need investment. Well, actually, the first thing I said, if you had 100,000 today, what would you do with it? It's always a pause. They said, until you know there's not a pause, there's work still that you can do. So I get them to sort of turn up, I suppose, knock on that investment door in a stronger way. And I love it. You know, I'm even smiling as I talk about failure. I mean, who does that? It's incredible.
No, that's great. And just hearing you talk, it just reminds me of, like, I feel like everyone has those, like, moments too. It's like, if you're at a dead, like, I have a great job, and sometimes I think, like, if I had, you know, like, say I had money in my account where I never had to worry till I died, what would I do as a job? You know what I mean? Like, like, what would I do for fun? And I'm like, if I was retired, I think I would be utterly, I'd be one of those people who would be utterly bored. And the way you ask on just like the redundancy, I was just thinking like, this is a person that is not going to be that type of person, like near the end of life, that like is just sitting, like, I imagine you are just going to, I assume you have a lot of extracurricular activities too outside of work. Yeah. You seem like that person that's just like, you know, like she knows that the only consistent thing in life is change. That's what I always realize, that if you're waiting for something to be consistent besides change, you're waiting for something that's infinite. But that's crazy. Yeah. That's what I.
Well, especially in startup businesses.
Yes. And I work with a company that's about 15 people. So, and you probably know this more than working with so many small companies, is that is the best place to learn. Like, you think about all these large corporations who have so much money and can devote so much training, but there is nothing you can learn faster with in a small company, because you take on, obviously, I mean, at those type of companies, you have to fill in gaps and stuff like that. Like, you take on, sometimes you learn, you probably learn more in a month than you would maybe 6 months at a company where you're doing a set role of activities over and over again, where it's more, you know, like habit forming, where you go to work and you definitely have, I'm the type of person who, if you were to give me that type of job where I had the same tasks like every week and goals like that, I probably look at the clock more than do my actual job. Whereas like where I go to work now, like, you know, like, oh, I try to get out on time so I can go back home, which is good for me, which I really appreciate. But at a small business, that's the other thing. Like, you go from, when you work in a normal job, you work 9 to 5. However, when you're working a job at a small company, especially if you have like ownership, you're always working. That's the crazy part. It's like, it's never off. Is that how you feel?
Yes and no. But it's interesting. And I definitely think I would definitely agree with what you've said. And that's something that I support the founders to cope with, because as part of my course, everyone always thinks, oh, I'm going to do who's our customer and get straight into marketing. But actually, that's not what supports the founders that come to me. It's often, going back to your point about never switching off, is to really focus the very first module, which is growth begins with you, which gets the entrepreneur founder to develop what their personal purpose and values are. And then we coach them to look at it in all areas of their life. Because when you look at the roles, not trying to make it not a gender issue, but when you look at the roles, women often got much more broader responsibility, or even if everyone's got that responsibility, they look upon it as serious, as absolutely every role has to matter. So that's a very important part of when I'm working with women growing their business, is I ask them the question about the fear of success, because we think it's the fear of failure, but actually in a huge amount of high percentage, it's the fear of success. What happens if I am so big that I don't have time for my family, for my friends, my hobbies? So we look at that early. We look at your whole roles and how you translate your values into your whole roles, because your quality of person isn't defined by time spent. It's defined by how you bring your values into making that role unique for you, whether it's unique as a parent, a friend, volunteering. And we look at the broader sense, because that's how I think people think. Like you asked, Sarah, I bet you do lots of extracurricular activities. I do, if they fit into values and stuff that I believe. And I think that exercise alone supports women to be okay with looking at their business as a growth opportunity. Because as long as you're turning up as yourself, your purpose, your inner voice, your values, however you want to put it, you know, you are fulfilling the purpose of your life, what you're doing, whether it's through the channel of business, parenting, etc. It's a very, very important step. And anyone who's worked with me before knows my slight annoyance to the expression work-life balance, because to me, there is only life and you find balance within it. You can't separate in to that. That's a very mindful way of thinking, of course, but it's one I really stand by. Is saying it's just be the best that you can be, turning up and everything. And I think when I was growing that brand, beautiful brand in the Netherlands, you know, I lost that. And as soon as you lose yourself, it's the first step to sort of wondering where you're going, not speaking with your own voice, you know, dedicating 80 hours a week. And that's when you hold tighter. So it's very important when we're growing businesses to really have a look at the bigger picture of your life beforehand. It's not just about marketing. It's not just about organizational purpose and values. It really does begin with you as the founder.
Speaking on that, how do you define that line? Because, I mean, I have this same vibe. And obviously with gender roles, there's a stigma, obviously, for women to have a larger role in the family, even though obviously it's starting to change in the last 10 years. But I feel, and this is probably even stronger for my wife, how do you, like, I feel like there's a constant struggle to be a good father and a, like, good at your job, because when it comes down to it, it's like, and it's a seesaw, like when you're at work, you're thinking, should I leave early? Should I, like, especially if you're working the long hours. And like you said, if you're a founder, when you're in one role at the certain role, it's hard to be in that mindset, because you should be. You shouldn't be thinking about the other. And you should have, I would imagine, strong cutoffs. Like, I'm at work, I'm at work. And then when I'm at home, I'm at home. How do you... Like, what's the line between, we'll just say, being a good parent and being a good founder / employee or entrepreneur?
I mean, it's so personal. As I say, there's not one way of growing businesses, and there's certainly not one way of living. But what we find is that when you give somebody more of a definition of the lens through which they see life, they find it easier to have a look at the broader picture and be happy with what they discover, whether it's as a founder, as a family, as friends. It's like it's a rod for them. And I can't speak about kids, but I found that one thing, when, as an example, when I find myself under pressure or just really bugged about something, the first question I ask myself is, what values am I fighting right now? And I know that sounds like very small, but if we actually ask ourselves a different question, is like, what's the bugbearer? What is it? And then to understand what values you're fighting there and answer it from there. You know, for example, I was very, very pressurized at the beginning of the year. I said, what's not working for me? And it was in honesty of one of the suppliers I was working with. And by actually identifying what that key issue was, you can then address it at the right level. And I think it's about the questions we ask ourselves. I think if we're trying to, in life, set it on, you know, percentages of home, percentages of work, percentages of this, it's never going to work because it's so individual. Am I being the parent through which my values are? Am I being the founder through which my values are? And those are the questions that we should ask ourselves. And it's so individual to a lot of people. I think when we start trying to put them in compartments, that's when we're challenged, because we're actually creating another set of actions which can cause anxiety, like work-life balance. Everyone goes, oh my gosh, have I got the right balance right? And it becomes a strategy. It shouldn't become a strategy. It becomes the way that we think and the way that we are. And when we're there, you're absolutely right. Let's be present. Let's be the best person we're doing. But the rules should be made of am I living from my values? Am I being that parent? Am I being that founder? Just different questions, really. It's a big question you asked me, but that would be my summary.
No, that's good. I like that answer. And my next question kind of, I guess it tangents off it, and it could be the same answer, but when obviously you're starting your own company or starting your own business, anything off that, it's usually a small team. And I would say most of the time, if it's super small, it's just yourself. How do you define what's too much hard work? Like it, you know, like sometimes it's like, and it's hard to compare with your friends or your family, especially if you don't have the right, well, you're not going to have a different family, but if it's the people around you, who are just like, what are you doing? Stuff like that. I don't know. It's like you said, it's different in different situations, but how do you know if you're taking on too much or this is just what you need to take on? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I think it's so varying. I mean, we know, well, in working in a small business, you know the roller coaster of success and challenge. It's there. You can't change that, but you can do your best to, if you look at growth as a series of waves, there are known patterns, and each one of those waves needs something different from the founder, from the team. And what we do is we just look at growth as one huge thing. So it becomes this big, big area. But if you break it down into individual waves, you can see, so what's this wave requiring from me? When I've got people in, how do I move myself? How do I onboard into the next wave and break it down? But one of the key things I do is we look at those waves and we onboard our founders into each one of them. What are the actions other than the purpose and values bit? We do, you've heard of the stakeholders grid, when you say, right, you know, it's the change grid, you know, make a list of everybody who influences your success. So everyone always goes marketeer, customer, and, you know, the sort of very generic way. But we start specifically with those that surround you. So we actually put in a strategy for family. You put in a strategy for friends, for hobbies, and all the roles in your life. So you fill it across going, okay, I am a mother. And you say, okay, what is the influence of that group of people towards your success? Well, I don't want them to feel left out. So what are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to sit everybody down and explain what I'm doing on a regular basis, what it's like to do that, and what more can I do? And actually ask the audience if they're a customer. They're a huge influence on it. You know, this is what I'm going to do. This is what, how can you help me and how can I help you? And the reason why I put that in is more and more I found that women in the early startup business were disguising, you know, their journey as if it was a hobby, or, oh yes, but I grow my own business. Oh, it's on the side. How much does it turn over? About, you know, 200,000. Yeah, okay, this isn't a side hobby by my definition. And actually encouraging them to talk very clearly about success and to be proud of it. I am a founder. I am a friend. I am a mother. They're all different roles, but they can very much align with each other. So we actually do use the stakeholders grid for actually working out what your strategy is for communication in this change mode for your family, your friends, your kids. It's a very good exercise to do. It sounds silly, but it really does work. It sort of gets out there.
I don't think that's silly at all. I mean, it makes complete sense because, I mean, you look at, and you mentioned this earlier, you look at stuff like this and it's always like more of a form, you know what I mean? And it doesn't apply to everyone. It applies to, you know, like population data or like the average person, where ironically, the average person is not the average person, if that makes sense. And, you know, like, okay, this is how much set time I have for work. But then you've got like family and friends. It's like, so it's like, it's like an exercise program. You go to an exercise program 3 or 4 times a week. However, if you're, let's say you're eating junk food for the other times you're not there, like it's not going to translate out well for your exercise. It's kind of like mood. So you've got to encounter basically, not just the app, like it's a full circle thing. It's not just working out or putting in the time for the startup between these hours. It's what you're doing off of those hours as well.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's balance.
And the crazy thing is, and my boss used to mention this too, it's like when you're at work, you have your brain's working off of work as well. When you're sleeping or even when you don't try, your brain is solving like problems at work when you're not even thinking about it. Like you're getting all these random ideas and stuff like that. And I don't know why I mentioned that. I just think that's fascinating and conniving that your brain is working when it shouldn't be. It should be relaxing.
Yeah, it should be relaxing. But there's also stuff that you can do from that. But, you know, I come from a big entrepreneurial family. It's a very fast moving entrepreneurial family. So I've grown up with just life. You know, I've grown up that, and I've seen, you know, parents come at home with the challenges, but I've also seen how they've dealt with that, how, you know, they merge. We used to have some amazing parties at the house. I used to earn a fiver for serving the wine. Wasn't quite child labor, but, you know, we got involved. We were involved, and it was fun and it was alive. And that's how I see it. And it probably, in somebody else's eyes, probably be like, oh my gosh, you know, it's work on. But when you grow up with it, you can see the benefits and the interdependency that kids have from being involved and not being involved and just being part of that journey. Not out of the level or anything, but being a part of it. There's a real benefit to just being very open with that communication where is possible. Very much so.
And I try to do that at home as well. I mean, my kids are only 1 year old and 3 year old, but like just giving small tasks to the child, it's like, let's my parents live with me during the week, and my dad gives my son this one task. It's to bring in the recycling bin on Wednesdays, and he'll give him $2 every Wednesday when he does it. And I feel like just even like starting off something, and it's not child labor. I feel like if anything, it's like you trust like these children for like these small tasks. And I think the responsibility is just like, oh, my parents trust me enough to do this and this and this. And I think it makes them feel more of, you know, like an adult, which I definitely think they are adults. They're just very young adults, in my opinion. Because, I mean, like, when you look at a kid and you see a tantrum, I mean, like, people at every age have tantrums. It's if either A, they can hide them well because they're so accustomed to them, or even people who don't hide them well. I mean, they are. It's like all those. I don't know if you've seen those old Snickers commercials where they've got like Betty White playing football, and she's just, you know, like the character is just grumpy, so he has a Snickers, and that's like you could even do that for a young child. They're grumpy because they're hungry. This is similar to my last few questions. I'm sorry, I'm asking all these boundary questions, but it popped into my head that. And I've thought of this as well, and maybe a lot of listeners thought of this. What is the point where you take, like, somebody's working a normal 9-to-5 job, and they're working on the side, their side business? How do they know when to make that leap from, like, you know, because it's like you're, you know, like playing tennis or golf or something with a hand behind your back. It's like, how do I really throw myself into this? But then, you know, you've got all this stuff in the back of your head. Like, how do I support my family? How do I like, and this goes to our other questions. Like, I'm going to have to use a lot more hours. Like, this isn't going to be like a 9-to-5. This might be 60 hours a week, might be working 6 or 7 days a week, constantly trying to support this business, because this is, like a fire that I have to keep on supplying so it doesn't go out. Like, how do you gauge yourself if you're ready for that jump into something, you know, like an island that you need to jump on and constantly like support yourself?
Well, I mean, from a strategy point of view, we'd always make sure their vision is clear, the vision of change. So that's from a strategic point of view, because the reason why you need that is then you start to understand more clearly, who are you doing it for? And is there enough demand for what you want to do and what you want to change? So there are some strategic questions that we encourage them to ask. You know, is it, should it just remain a hobby? Or are there people out there that really need you to solve their problems? And is it big enough? And from a practical point, which is part of the question of supporting the you know, your family and stuff, we'll do minimum existent wage. So we'll say, what is the minimum you need to live on in terms of that, and taking into account what is your sole responsibility and what can you do? And then that can often be in terms of joint, especially with married people or people living together. But our aim is to always make that people financially interdependent from any other source of income. And that's very important. And that's when it becomes, that's when it moves from becoming a hobby into becoming a viable model. And they're closer to it than they think, because when somebody is kind of, oh my gosh, I've got this huge journey, when you break it down, you break it down so it's not a huge journey. So you say, I need to do this and then this. And I work with a lot of sustainability companies, a lot of circular businesses. And of course, because it's a very important part of our future, there's also funding, a lot of funding to do. So I very much support people in, how do I knock on that door in the right way? How do I? And what happens when, my point at the beginning, what happens if someone gives me 100,000? I want them to be really prepared for what they're going to do with it. And honestly, I'm laughing as I say it, but it really is a thing, because you've bootstrapped for so long and you haven't quite decided what it is. And then someone goes, I'll give you 100K. Oh my gosh, I don't know. Do I want it? And it's amazing. And that's what I mean by the fear of success and how we look at and break it down into a longer period in order that they go, yes, thank you for the 100,000 and know how to spend it properly.
Do you feel like, and I've heard this a lot, and in like everything, like fitness, obviously business as well, is and mental health as well, because I think I just heard a podcast that was talking about, like, for example, they were talking about PTSD compared from like US to like Israeli, like things that were kind of comparing, that like when Americans came back from war, they told them that this is what they were going to have, like for mental illness, you have PTSD, you're going to have all these symptoms. Whereas like in Israeli, they were saying like, we're going to support you, whatever happens to you, kind of like gauging what they could do, just saying that they can kind of, they weren't putting them in a box basically. But to go towards my point, which I'm trying to get back to, is if we don't set ourselves in boxes, I feel like we can kind of expand on that. And
if you don't have the template to place it in, does that not just let you sort of
off even more? Yeah, I guess if you're restricted, you're not really limited to your goal. Or sorry, you're not limited by what others see of you. So you can kind of expand out of that. And you're not restricted. And I feel like that's the case, especially with businesses where, and I guess this could be a negative too, with a Herculean treadmill, where you like, you set your goals further than you can ever imagine. That way you can kind of expand on it. And I feel like that's what you're trying to say, like with nobody's gonna, not nobody, but a lot of these people who you probably talk to, they think 100,000, like, I'll never get that. Like, I won't even ever think about it. So when the moment happens, it's like, to put it into like sports terms, like you don't think you're going to get the ball. So you never think about like taking the shot, like if I'm going to make it or not. Yeah. So
it's really important, because this is why we say to set them for a vision of change, because when you're stood there and you've literally worked, as you say, like for 2 years solidly, really, really hard, And you're thinking, oh my goodness, you know, growth, you're kidding me. How could I possibly do any more? And you go, well, you don't have to do it. You know, the point about going on to a new growth wave is to have that vision of change, and your job as a founder changes. It changes from the doing all the time to slowly doing still a bit, but more inspiring people to be curious about the vision. How can we create that change? How can we do that? And that's when we can let other people in, if we've got the space between us and our business. So that's a very important journey. Because a lot goes, vision, I don't want to save the world. And it goes, dude, no one's asking you to. As long as you've changed, you've got a vision of change, it can be for one person, 10 people, your village. It's only these crazy headlines that make us think, oh my gosh, I've got to be in 51 countries. And I interviewed my mother once on this. And I said to her, I said, what letter would you write to your founding self? 40 years ago, when you were beginning, what would you have written to yourself? She says, well, I would never have said how big it was getting. I mean, that would have been terrifying for me. And it sums up just this very important point, is stop putting headline measures to what you want to achieve and just look at that change. And if that change is needed, it will basically spiral a ripple effect. You don't have to put the fear in you that you're going to, what happens when I'm at 75 million? Oh, okay, let's just try putting a message out first. You know, it doesn't matter. You're not responsible for that. Because when you get onto enough growth waves, your job is to inspire the right people to, well, basically do the job for you. And your only job is to make sure they want to still do it and it's exciting. And I think that's a really big change for founders, to make sure they're not holding on and they're sort of holding on to this growth wave and the company is like whacking them on, you know, the next growth wave, and they're trying to manage both, and eventually they'll sink and, you know, gracefully sink in the middle, unfortunately. But that's why this onboarding and breaking things down is so important. Don't look at it as a huge task. Don't look at it as 75 billion I made last night while I was asleep. Just look at it in your steps, your growth, your pattern. I think that's very important.
That is great. Because speaking of that, how, like, I mean, obviously when you scale up, like obviously when you're a mom and pop type size, you've got one location, but you start to get, you know, like numerous locations, stuff like that. The biggest thing I would imagine is when you scale, keeping quality is like what, like a founder is like, that's like your heart and soul, right? That's what you, but you know, this probably better than most, is that when you expand, it's you're doling out all this responsibility to keep the brand and the heart of the company the same, but you're basically dividing that responsibility out. Is it a battle between like reducing the quality of what your vision is, or is it a matter of hardening to keep that? What is that battle like?
The battle is the united picture with which you gather on. And it's such a nervous thing, because you're right, you know, you're a founder. And you've nurtured this baby that nobody else loved, ugly baby. You've loved it, and you've been the only one. And people look towards you and are kind of going, oh, it is. And then as you're growing, more people are going, actually, it's not so ugly. And you're going, ah, oh, so now you want to help me bring it up. It's literally this simple. So now you want to part. And I think that way of stopping and starting on these ways is very, very important, because it sort of closes down an era and opens up a new one where you need people to do it. And of course, you're not showing the baby. Those are the urban myths going, oh, do you remember when our, you know, business was ugly and no one wanted anything to do with it? But you're in this beautiful new phase. And each time when people on board, you need to spend a tremendous time doing the vision, the purpose and the values, and how that translates in into everything you do, how you take decisions, what the structure is. And we say that there's four key drivers, and they all need to be aligned. The way that you work, your customer and the way you speak to them, your team, how you bring them into making decisions, and the overall purpose of the company, and how you take yourself out of that and keep yourself separate. And this power ball, as we call it, the four key growth drivers, you know, if you can align all of those things, 80% of your job is done. It's you're on to that next phase, because one of the biggest challenges is people try to climb and they're too heavy to climb because they haven't let go of, you know, the things we used to do. So, you know, someone's still handwriting the little notes that we always did, and, you know, these small little things.
But, yeah, sticky notes, you know, everywhere. Yeah.
That's right. And you've moved on and you won't let go of old habits. And this is one of the biggest things, is actually to basically shake the tree, let fall off what doesn't serve, to ensure that you're light enough to sort of summit again. Then you come back down. And this is the repeat of business growth, down, up, and up. Getting rid, but sometimes we forget to get rid, let go, say goodbye.
No, that makes complete sense. And just like everything you said, it's kind of like breaking everything down to a smaller level. And I mean, yeah, that I, in my opinion, that applies to everything you do, every sector of life. I mean, you could say in medicine, you could say in teaching your kids, everything. Do you feel like a lot of, I don't know if you call them client or founders, do you feel like a lot of the time you're kind of showing them a mirror of obviously who they are right now and who they can be, but breaking it down on such a small level for them to see? Like, and like I said, it's when you break it down to a small level, like you said, with the $100,000, I feel like that's a huge thing, because you're showing them, hey, this is you with $100,000. Like, what is that person going to do?
Exactly. Break it down to steps. And we start with Mount Everest, which sounds like, well, it sounds like a small step, Julie. But we say that you, when you, in between the phases of growth, you're on camp four. And, you know, they call it the death zone, thin oxygen, etc. And you're watching everybody walk past and summit. And you're thinking, why can't I go? And it's just that in each of the camps on the way up, you've taken new processes, new team members, and it's all a bit messy when you get up there because you've had to roller coaster really, really super fast. So what we try and do is we take them back down to base camp, obviously not literally. And I said, you've done the hard work. All you're going to do now is climb back up, and we're going to get rid of what no longer serves and put in more, you know, corporate organizational purpose and values go in, what the vision is, how do you join people? And we literally reinvent back the business model in a simpler way. And then when they get back up to camp four and they've got their everything there, who they're doing it for, they can climb as much as they want, as long as those four key drivers are done. And it's confidence, it's clarity. And, you know, we find it very hard to say goodbye to certain things. I call it the Marie Kondo of businesses. You know, thank you for its service. Off you go.
No,
I love people.
No,
I'm people.
I was about to say sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so hard to do. I'm talking about things because my parents were. They're still, you know, like hoarders, or like, and it's so hard to do that, especially with their living with us. But it's so hard to get out of that vicious cycle of holding on to people that are like that, or even things or habits. Okay, we'll move on to the very last question. What is something that your parents did that you would like to pass on to a next generation? And what is something that you would kind of do that you'd want to pass on that your parents wouldn't necessarily have done? Obviously different generation and stuff like that.
I think the thing that I'll definitely always pass on to others is their phrase, stronger together. They've, even in their businesses, they shared wealth and responsibility from day one. And that sharing and building organizational purpose and values into your actual pillars of your business model is priceless. And that sharing of wealth and success but also sharing challenges. You know, when COVID came, it's a retail organization. It isn't just about the good times when it goes. It's also about how do we come together to make sure that, you know, we're strong together in the future. And that can mean sacrifices. But watching that move back and forth, I think, has been an incredible learning moment for me. And something I pass on to all the young entrepreneurs is don't try and own everything. In today's world, where it's very big sort of ecosystem, try and share that responsibility, success and wealth between it with the right people. You know, share with you, just because you found someone who can build your website, don't mean you have to make them your first shareholder. it's okay. It's like this. So that's something that I definitely would pass on for sure. And I think one of the things that I probably stand for myself is the importance of knowing values from a younger age, your own values. And, you know, when you're living in a very fast-paced world, I know my life before and after, when I had clearly set values. It's the top four. It's not all of them. We all have values, but we just put some higher than others. And I know the difference that it made for me in life and understanding where conflict came from. And that's the thing I'm going to be passing on in a couple of months' time. I launch Ultimate Ownership for Young People about how do we develop our purpose and our values? How do we understand who we are? Just basically to support young people to be more internally driven rather than externally influenced, you know, in business and not. But it's such a beautiful discovery for people, and it can evolve it, but it's just about thinking, who am I? And it's definitely, I love working with younger people on that now. It's just brilliant. So that's something that definition of who we are and the importance of knowing your own voice. I like the fact that I'm going to pass it on to as many people going forward, for sure.
No, that's great. And I like the first part. It was it's not just share, but be, you know, like selective. Don't just give it out to people that you know will kind of like do well with what you give, instead of just giving it out willy-nilly. Because sometimes people, you know, like knowingly give out, but it's not necessarily good to just, this sounds bad, but equally give out, because sometimes people take advantage. Obviously people, they don't know the value of what's given, to put it that way.
That's fine.
And they can easily just keep coming back and not give back.
That's right. They could end up with shares, and, you know, they've built your website and that's great. But I would say to them, in 2 years' time, what's that person going to be saying in your board meeting? What's their contribution? And I go, oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I appreciate it. And it gave me a brand new perspective. Especially, no, it was great. And is there anything else? And obviously you mentioned the series you have coming up. Is there anything else you wanted to promote?
I mean, obviously you can find me on wiseminds.com, and wise with a Y, not with an I, because, you know, don't want to be old. So that's available. And I mentioned the Powerball, and, you know, you can ask yourself, am I ready for growth? You can do the growth evaluation. It's completely free. That we created with myself and a behavioral scientist and a financial consultant about how aligned are you with your purpose and values? Are you ready to get onto that next growth wave? And it gives you all the results on there. And yeah, it's for free. You can test yourself on your four growth drivers. So it's a bit of fun.
No, that's great. And I can put a couple of those links up on when I drop the episode as well.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
If you like this week's episode of People More Interesting Than Me, please follow me on Apple Podcasts so you won't miss out on more episodes like these.